From MainePublic.org, I'm Barbara Caridi, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Thursday, November 10th, 2016. And on this day, with the vote too close to call for more than a day, the fate of two ballot measures, including one that would legalize recreational marijuana, has now been determined. Governor Paul LePage weighs in on voters' choices, saying he's thrilled with the election of Republican Donald Trump for president, but not happy with the passage of two of the referendum questions on Maine's ballot. And what will happen to the Maine-based movement joined by millions called Pantsuit Nation in the wake of Hillary Clinton's defeat? Those stories and more after this.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners and by USM's Muskie School of Public Service Master of Public Health Program, preparing students for today's complex population health and health services needs. And Coastal Maine Botanical Gardens, presenting Gardens Aglow, where visitors will see the gardens in a whole new light. Tickets available at mainegardens.org.
I'm Barbara Caridi. 2 days after the election, the Associated Press is officially calling the results for question one on the Maine ballot. With less than a fraction of a percentage point separating the yes vote from the no vote, the AP is handing the victory to supporters of marijuana legalization. Question one would set up a framework to regulate, tax, and sell recreational marijuana in Maine. Opponents have not ruled out asking for a recount, and they have until next Wednesday to make the request. Meanwhile, supporters say they're grateful to Maine voters and ready to start working toward implementation. For former State Representative Diane Russell of Portland, the vote is especially meaningful. Russell sponsored several marijuana legalization bills in the legislature beginning in 2011 when she says she was met with skepticism and hostility at City Hall.
A small group of us came out and said, and I released the first legalization bill in decades, I think, in this state, and it was the only one that year in the country. Someone showed up and had taken the time to hand sew jail Diane Russell on the back of their sweater. If anybody knows where that sweater is, I'd like it.
At the time, the Portland Press Herald also editorialized against the proposal, saying Russell was, quote, getting into mischief. But Russell says over the years, it's been gratifying to see the paper follow the issue closely and gradually change its position.
I think the evolution is remarkable from that point. Over the years, they have watched this, they have learned, and it meant a lot when they came out and said that we do not have the confidence that the legislature will do this. And that was in direct response to the number of times that I have tried to take a rational bill to the legislature and have been met with serious resistance. And I tried to tell folks that the people of Maine were going to be with us, and we took our case to the people and we won.
It took 5.5 years, but during that time, Russell was also involved in a local effort to get Portland voters to approve a local ordinance, largely symbolic, to make recreational marijuana legal. The measure passed, making Portland the first city on the East Coast to take that stance. Meanwhile, another squeaker on the ballot, question two, has also been declared a winner by a margin of less than 1 percentage point. Under the measure, Maine's highest earners, those with individual taxable incomes above $200,000 a year, will pay an additional 3% tax toward a new fund that will help support public education. The fund is intended to support public school students' learning in kindergarten through 12th grade. Supporters expect the fund to raise $157 million a year. Governor Paul LePage, meanwhile, is not happy that voters endorsed question two and a hike in the minimum wage. While he says he's thrilled with President-elect Donald Trump's victory, he says approval of those two referendum questions will hurt the state's economy. Mal Leary has more.
LePage says the approval of an increase in the state's minimum wage will hurt seniors. His reasoning is that the hike will increase the cost of goods and services beyond the means of older Mainers on fixed incomes.
The minimum wage bill is going to really put about 325,000 seniors in severe poverty. I'm going to do everything in my power to try to mitigate that and try to help them.
LePage says he's also very worried that the passage of the 3% surtax on household incomes of $200,000 a year or more, including joint returns, he says as of January 1st, they will be taxed at a rate of 10.15%, and he says it's already had a negative impact on the state's economy and will cost the state revenue.
We've already lost some people. I know two dentists that are already opening up offices in New Hampshire. They're only 20 miles from the border, and they are going to go to New Hampshire. That's going to have a toll. We're going to lose income there. How much? I don't know.
That concern was brought up by the nonpartisan Economic Forecasting Commission that plans to meet later this month to assess the impact of the referenda on Maine's economy. The page says the two measures could cause a recession in Maine and vows to introduce some type of legislation in January to stop that from happening. As for a job in the Trump administration, which Trump publicly offered during one of its visits this summer, LePage jokes that the only position he would be interested in is ambassador to Canada in the summer and Jamaica in the winter. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
And newly elected Senate Republicans have nominated their leaders for the session, and they include some familiar faces. Current Senate President Mike Thibodeau was nominated to lead the 128th session that convenes next month. Both Majority Leader Garrett Mason and Assistant Leader Andre Cushing are going to continue in those posts. Mason says the voters have given them a lot of extra work to do, such as writing the regulations to implement Question 1, the marijuana measure.
You wrote major substantive rules into this process. It's going to take a long time. Major substantive rules sometimes take a year to complete.
Mason says lawmakers will likely consider making some changes to the minimum wage measure, and he says the ranked choice voting measure approved Tuesday is probably unconstitutional. He says lawmakers might ask the Supreme Court for guidance before they spend time figuring out how to implement the measure. And we've heard a lot about how voters in Maine's rural areas turned out to cast their ballots for President-elect Donald Trump over Hillary Clinton and help tip the scales on the ballot questions. Maine Public political correspondent Steve Missler took a deep dive into the numbers and talks with Nora Flaherty about what they reveal.
Hey, Steve.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. So you have been digging into the election returns to see if the numbers tell a story of the election. What have you found so far?
So nationally, the diagnosis of Trump's win pointed to a huge support or surge in support from working class whites who are anxious about jobs and demographic changes. And that appears to be no different in Maine. Trump won all the interior of the state, including 9 of the state's 16 counties, and Clinton won most of the affluent coastal areas. Trump also won rural areas that have voted for Democratic presidential candidates before. For example, President Obama won Maine statewide by 16 points just 4 years ago. He won every county except Piscataquis County. Clinton won Maine by 3 points, and she lost in dozens of places that Obama won. Let's just focus on Somerset County for a second. According to the U.S. Census, 15% of residents in Somerset County have a bachelor's degree or higher. That's a lot less than a 28% in Maine. The county is 97% white, whiter than all of Maine. So Obama edged Mitt Romney in Somerset County by about 2 percentage points 4 years ago. But Trump won it by nearly 13 just the other day. And if you drill down even further and pick, say, the town of Madison, which lost a major employer when the paper mill shut down there in May, Madison went for Obama in 2012 and 2008. This year, it went for Trump, 57% to 37%. And you can see this kind of result all over the country. Take the Rust Belt. Obama won Youngstown, Ohio by 12 points. Clinton and Trump battled to a draw.
I have read that Clinton suffered from what's called an enthusiasm gap. Was that the case in Maine?
Yeah, it sure looks that way. So close to 740,000 people voted in the presidential election in Maine this year. That's 30,000 more than 4 years ago, and that's a very high turnout. But turnout didn't appear to help Clinton, and it certainly appears to have helped Trump. She got 44,000 fewer votes than Obama did 4 years ago. Trump got 43,000 more than Romney. And if you overlay that nationally, Clinton received 5 million fewer votes than Obama did 4 years ago. Trump received 1 million less than Romney. And here's a few other little tidbits. Question 5 swaps Maine's election system for a ranked choice voting system. When we talked to voters, some people were confused by it, and they said they either voted against it or just skipped the question. So get this. Nearly 27,000 more people voted for ranked choice than Clinton. And the divide was even wider for question 4, which raises the minimum wage. Clinton received 60,000 fewer votes than those who voted for question 4, and she even supports raising the federal minimum wage to the same dollar amount. Meanwhile, Trump suggested at one point there should not be a minimum wage. And incidentally, many rural parts of the state favored question 4.
I've heard a lot about question 3. It would have strengthened background checks on gun sales, that it helped with rural voter turnout, as well as Trump or Congressman Bruce Poliquin. That seems intuitive in a way, but is it supported by the data?
Well, more Mainers voted on question 3 than anything else on the statewide ballot, even more than the presidential election. So you could certainly say that parts of the state that supported Trump also opposed question 3. The maps are almost identical to the presidential one. More people voted against question 3 than voted for Trump, 56,000 more. Gun control and stronger background checks were part of Clinton's policy platform. So it's possible that Trump benefited from the anti-question 3 vote. You could argue that Poliquin benefited too, especially since Emily Kane backed Clinton. But you could also make a strong case that Poliquin's enthusiastic public support for what remains of the manufacturing jobs in the 2nd Congressional District was a bigger factor. After all, Poliquin was speaking to the same white working class voters that turned out for Trump and who previously turned out for Democrats, including President Obama just 4 years ago.
Okay, thanks a lot, Steve.
You got it.
And that was Steve Missler talking with Nora Flaherty. And as analysts crunch the numbers and figure out what the election results really tell us, for one group, Donald Trump's victory is especially disappointing. It's a Maine-based group that's become more of a movement on Facebook now, with 3 million-plus members. Jennifer Mitchell has this reaction from the ardent Hillary Clinton supporters known as Pantsuit Nation.
When we called Aline Sistone, a member of Pantsuit Nation, it was clear that the results of the presidential election have left her reeling.
I'm just sad, upset, angry.
For her, as with so many others in the group, the stakes felt higher this time.
You hope that even in our divides, that people will stand for the values that unite us as human beings, and to reward someone who's openly talked about policies that he would initiate on day one that will divide this country even further. It's just hard to wrap your brain around.
Those sentiments are being echoed all over the diverse Pantsuit Nation group. Sistone has lived in Maine for 6 years, but she comes from Kenya and is the mother of 2 biracial children. That's a common theme on the site. Parents concerned that their children will no longer have a role model in the White House. One of Sistone's posts was about her son being bullied at school.
So you want to teach your kids that if you are a bad person, there are consequences. Right now, it does not feel that way.
The posts on Pantsuit Nation are diverse. Some are same-sex couples worried their right to marry might be under threat. Some are parents of disabled children afraid that the social climate has become one that rewards name-calling and bullying. And others are victims of sexual assault, aghast that allegations of Donald Trump's own sexual aggression were given an apparent pass.
One of the reasons that it really took off is that it didn't exist before, that sort of forum that was open to people sharing their own stories and their own voices, you know, without fear of being negatively attacked.
That's Pantsuit Nation creator Libby Chamberlain of Brooklyn, Maine. As of Thursday, the group, which had started last month with just a few of Chamberlain's family and friends as a way of supporting Clinton, had blossomed to 3.2 million. On Wednesday, in her concession speech, Clinton herself acknowledged the group in her thank you list.
Knocked on doors, talked to neighbors, posted on Facebook, even in secret private Facebook sites. I want everybody coming out from behind that and make sure your voices are heard going forward.
The pantsuit is a bittersweet symbol for gender equality, a reminder that women had to fight not just for the right to vote, but for the right to pursue a career alongside men. In fact, pants could and did get a woman arrested as late as 1938. For this group that acknowledges the pantsuit and all it's come to represent, a Trump presidency seems like a giant leap backward. But Chamberlain says it's not over.
Even though the result of the election was not what we all hoped, we now have this group to sort of harness the energy and hopefully do some really good things in the next few years as we're faced with a leadership that doesn't reflect our values.
For Raleen Sistone, she says she still has not talked to her Kenyan family about the results of the election. She will, she says. And she's also trying to be optimistic and give President-elect Trump a chance to prove that he can be a good leader. Till then, it's one pant leg in front of the other. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Jennifer Mitchell.
And last night, hundreds rallied in Portland to protest Donald Trump's election as president. Protesters carried signs that said, "Not my president," and "Keep hate out of Maine." Organizers said they wanted a place for people to come together after Tuesday's election, in which the Republican defeated Democrat Hillary Clinton. Mainers split their electoral votes. Clinton collected 3, while Trump got 1. And one more election-related story, residents in the Aroostook County town of Oxbow Plantation voted Tuesday to deorganize in a bid to become part of Maine's unorganized territories. The vote was 37-2. Steve Sherman, Oxbow's first assessor, says there are fewer and fewer people living in the town, and it's been hard to find people to fill municipal positions. And he says the property tax rate has gotten pretty high.
We're a really aging population with a lot of people living on fixed incomes, and high taxes are a burden. So it seemed like the time had come, and I guess it has by the outcome of the election.
The Bangor Daily News reports that the deorganization plan has been approved by the legislature and that residents hope it will be implemented by next summer. In the meantime, Oxbow Plantation has to liquidate town properties, including a public boat launch and the community center. The town will also have to withdraw from Maine School Administrative District 32 and pay off its share of the debt for a consolidated school complex. Coming up, some Maine news that's not about the election. New England's shuttered shrimp fishery will not be allowed to reopen this winter. An arm of the regulatory Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission decided today that it will keep the fishery closed because of concerns about poor reproduction in a warming ocean. The fishery has been shut down since 2013. It was mostly based in Maine when it was open, though some fishermen brought the shrimp ashore in New Hampshire and Massachusetts. The small, pinkish, sweet-tasting shrimp were a popular winter seafood item in New England and beyond when the fishery was open. Meanwhile, a research project at the Gulf of Maine Research Institute is looking to get some real numbers about shrimp populations. The Institute is sending Maine lobstermen out with acoustic equipment that will help them learn where the shrimp are congregating over the winter and where they lay their eggs. Adam Bacchus, a research associate at the Institute, says using sound allows researchers to cover a lot more ground.
So each one of our 10 boats does a 40-mile survey. We're able to cover a large part of the coastal waters up and down Maine and then look at that data for the presence of shrimp signal and make some estimations around the distribution of shrimp up and down the coast.
The sampling is being done in areas that haven't been surveyed in the past, but in the future, fisheries managers may use the results to figure out when it might be time to reopen the shrimp fishery. And Maine Medical Center said yesterday that it was postponing operating room procedures over concerns about a patient suspected to have a so-called prion disease. Prion diseases are rare, progressive, neurodegenerative disorders that are fatal in most cases. Testing is underway to reach an official diagnosis. According to WMTW-TV, the hospital notified the Maine Center for Disease Control Tuesday evening about the situation. The hospital has postponed elective surgical procedures at its Bramhall campus that were scheduled for yesterday and today and is sterilizing equipment and surgical areas. And finally, here's meteorologist Paul Cousins with the forecast.
We launched this long Veterans Day weekend with benign, balmy weather, and for the most part, that will be a recurring theme into early next week. Very mild tonight as clouds tighten up across Maine. Over northern and western sections, showers late mixing with snow across the mountains, 30 to 39 north to south. Tomorrow, a windy and wild day. Northwest gusts could exceed 40 miles per hour in a few locations, rendering leaf collection projects futile. Rain and snow showers will continue over northern and western Maine with some accumulations through the mountains. Partly sunny central and down east, mostly sunny
sunny Portland south, 39 to 54 north to south. Saturday, breezy and bright until late for all but the far north, where skies will average out partly sunny, 38 to 49 north to south. Sunday, more tranquil and much milder. Partly cloudy north, mostly sunny for the rest of the state, 46 to 59 north to south. And Monday, marvelous, abundant sun and unseasonably warm. Upper 40s far north to 60 interior southwest, a bit cooler along the coast with sea breezes. This is meteorologist Paul Cousins for Maine Public.
And that's the news on this day in Maine, Thursday, November 10th, 2016. Robert Holt composed our theme music. Thanks to our news leaders, Keith Shortall, Susan Sharon, and Andrew Catalina, and to Mal Leary, Steve Missler, Jennifer Mitchell, Nora Flaherty, and Ed Morin for their contributions. We'd like to hear your thoughts on the podcast. You can rate and comment in iTunes, or you can email us at tdim@mainepublic.org. I'm Barbara Caridi. For all of us here at Maine Public, thanks for listening.